Today on Seculo, a shock poll that Democrats are done with Joe Biden.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, folks, we get into this political season. There's still, I think, what's interesting is what's happening on the Democrat side of the aisle, because the time for changing has to come pretty soon if there is going to be a change. And I think that's always still an uphill question. But you've got Democrats, when they are being asked in these polling surveys about Joe Biden and his job performance, you know, one of the things they point out, nearly two-thirds believe that he's just too old for the job. Now, when you look at then again, people ask that about Donald Trump, the number goes down to like 50%. So again, even though they're of kind of similar age, so it's more about how he appears than the actual number. And I think that's fair, because you're not really judging it based off what number of age 70 is. It's kind of how he moves around, how he conducts himself, how he speaks. You also look at just playing out popularity in this and whether or not people think it's possible that he's doing a good job as president by an 11-point margin. More voters say that Trump has a better record of accomplishment as president, 51% to Biden, with only 40%, who's actually gotten a lot done for Democrats. Not a lot of policies I like that, but he's gotten a lot done considering the makeup of Congress, and yet still his own party turning against him.
What's interesting here is with four indictments against the former president of the United States, four, New York, Florida, Washington, D.C., Georgia, of course. With four indictments pending, if the election were held today, no one could call it. It's even. Now, we haven't seen a state-by-state breakdown yet, and I don't know how that's going to play out. But what has become clear is, I think for Republicans, all of this two-tiered system of justice that we've all been talking about is having a dramatic and real impact on the election. Age, I do believe, for the first time in our history, I mean, it was a little bit with Ronald Reagan in the second term, but I think age as a factor is going to be a big deal this time around. And that's because you're looking at the possibility of Vice President Harris fulfilling the role. There's a lot of talk about whether Joe Biden will actually run or not. And I think the reality to that is that unless something dramatic happens, he is going to be the nominee.
Yeah. I mean, you go through the numbers. We will go through some more statistics. We come back to the second break as well. So we want to go through more of this poll, because I think this is very interesting, because you get a sense of where Democrats are, where the American people are with a Trump-Biden head-to-head matchup. We're also going to be talking about the Saudi Arabians considering a deal with Israel, and guess who is trying to cause that deal to not come to fruition? The Palestinians, which would be interesting enough. I know the Saudis get beat up a lot in the news and the media, but what you might find interesting, and we're going to explain a little later in the show, is that the Saudis cut off funding to the Palestinian Authority years ago, because they said, like we've said, I mean, that it's a corrupt system that is not legitimately trying to actually negotiate a peace deal, and that they were just handing money away and putting it into the pockets of these oligarchs in the Palestinian territory. So interesting to note there, probably doesn't make a lot of news, but the Saudi Arabians had cut the Palestinians off.
But here's what's interesting about the American Center for Law and Justice. We have a full functioning office in the heart of Jerusalem. We are in a facility with the Christian Broadcasting Network. We share office space with them. Jeff Balaban, a senior attorney who's had decades of experience on issues related to Israel, anti-Semitism, the United Nations, runs that office for us. He will be coming to us live from Jerusalem today. So for those of you that supported our efforts last month in our Life and Liberty Drive, let me say this. Thank you. We had a tremendous response. We outperformed even our wildest expectations. That could not have happened without you. That helps us make up for a deficit we've had from the beginning of the year. And what I want to do in these next 2 months is just close that deficit the best we can going into November, December. Then we can hopefully be in the positive. So again, support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. If you're watching on any of our social media, I encourage you to share it with your friends and make sure you subscribe. And again, support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. We're going to be talking more about this shock poll, what it means. And then coming up, we're going to be joined by Jeff Balaban out of the ACLJ office in Jerusalem. That office happens because of you. Back with more in a moment.
to Secular. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. Ask you this. Do you think Joe Biden too old to run for president? I mean, and it, is it about age to you, or is it just about how he looks, how he sounds? I mean, I think you kind of take age out of the equation, what the actual number is. And it's, do you seem competent? Do you seem aware? Do you seem like you actually have control, that you're running what is a massive government with major decisions that you need to make? So it's a fair question to ask, especially when a majority, two-thirds of Democrats believe he is too old to run. That's a big change than just the last year. Now, there's also then questions about, well, who would be in his place? Is it Kamala Harris? I mean, she's not, again, that popular with the Democrat. I don't think the Democrat base thinks
but
she's going to be
Kamala
great.
Kamala Harris versus a Gavin Newsom. What's going to happen there? It's a horribly run state of California. He's a telegenic guy. He's a good politician, retail.
I mean, if they're running in a primary against each other?
Yeah, I mean, if he
I don't know
out,
how we even have time for that. Now.
So the superdelegates make the selection.
Yeah, it'd be like a last minute.
So remember, Democrats have superdelegates.
Something at the, so we have to have something at the convention, really.
Yeah.
But I mean, what's also interesting in this poll, not only do they think he's too old, they don't, only 35% of voters believe he's mentally up for the job. He ties Trump, actually Trump's a little ahead about cares about people like you. The only thing he leads Trump on is honest, which is just by like 5 percentage points. This is when they poll Republicans and Democrats. The vision for the future, Trump's ahead. Strong record of accomplishments, Trump's ahead. A likable person, there's where Biden gets ahead a little bit.
I think the great unknown on all of this is, as these, we may get a decision today, for instance, from Fulton County, which would remove, if it's granted, remove the case from the state court system to the federal court system. Now, will it move all of the cases or just some of them? We don't know. So the question really is that going to have an impact on the primaries? Probably not, right?
I mean, unlikely that that, again, is, I think what would happen to have a move on the primaries would be if there were convictions being made where President Trump was convicted. I think it's the only thing is that if that, something like that happened while people were voting, I think you're up into a situation where it's impossible to predict how voters would respond.
But isn't that the Democratic claim right now to try to get a conviction? Don't you think? I believe it is,
because the indictment hasn't worked. The indictment has only made Donald Trump more popular, has made more people think there is a two-tiered system of justice, that what we've been saying about a witch hunt is true, and that they are will do everything possible to try and prevent him from being president or even being the nominee. So it hasn't worked to indict. That hasn't worked. So now what do they have to try? Well, now they're stuck with indicting him. So now they've got to try to move forward in one of these cases and rush for some kind of conviction. And then plunge us into, Dad, what I think would be a constitutional chaos about what happens to a convicted former president who's protected by the Secret Service if they ever got to a conviction. They also have to be concerned that out of these jury cases, that these juries are going to be very confused about these so-called charges that they're bringing because they're so novel in theory. Yeah. That they may, you might easily be able to get a jury each time to say,
And having one, all you need is one juror to hang the jury. I mean, it's not that common. Here's what Marsha Blackburn said about the issue, especially of the age issue, which I think is now a factor, clearly.
And I think the one that deserves our attention at the top of the list is President Biden. And when you see Joe Biden struggle with words, with days, with times, with places, then it drives home the point of how important it is to have someone who is capable in leadership. And quite honestly, I don't think anyone wants to have a President Kamala Harris.
So I think this is going to, you're going to hear this drumbeat a little bit, but there is no indication at this point, Jordan, right, that Joe Biden's going to not run. All indications are he is.
That's right. I mean, and so far when you actually have looked at his administration of the Democrat Party, again, I think it would take something pretty massive for that change. I mean, some kind of health scare that was serious enough. I don't think it's just going to be his gaffes. I don't think it's just going to be kind of his, the weak way he kind of walks or sometimes forgets things. Again, we're getting a little late in the process to run a full-fledged campaign to replace him.
Yeah.
Harris would be the natural fit, but then you're going to have the Gavin Newsoms of the world, and people are going to talk about the Michelle Obamas of the world. I think, honestly, listen, he's in a bad spot right now. They've also got themselves stuck with indicting Donald Trump, and now that didn't work to kill Donald Trump. So now they have to realize, now we got to go and convict Donald Trump. And that's a lot tougher than...
And I believe they are going to try to do that aggressively.
Yes. I can't imagine they want... I mean, unless it just is impossible procedurally, they're trying to find one of these that they can get through at least before people head to vote. Maybe not in the primary. So that's not going to happen.
Georgia could be the leading candidate. Now, let me just tell you what's going on in Georgia, though. And you know that I worked on this part. We've assembled there a team of lawyers that I think it's the leading defense bar in Georgia. You got Steve Sadow, exceptionally bright criminal defense lawyer. You got his friend, my friend, our colleague, Donnie Samuels, who I've known since coming out of law school. Donnie and I were in the, Jordan, you'll remember this way back in the day, the Standard Building in downtown, it's Ed Garland's firm. Yep. And they had the top three floors, we had the next three floors, and some other lawyers had the floors under us. You got Scott Grubman, Nick Chilovis' former, Nick Chilovis passed away, but Nick Chilovis, one of the leading criminal defense lawyers, was with one of the big firms, started his own firm, very well-known, all former U.S. attorneys in these cases, in Grubman's case, and they had their staff. You've got Frank and Laura Hogue out of Mercer, out of Macon, that are some of the leading criminal defense. All of a sudden, you've got this real criminal defense team coming together in Georgia. So now the DA, Fannie Willis, is looking at a situation where she's got a army of lawyers coming after her positions. So if this idea of indicting Trump was going to derail him, it has not worked.
Right.
So now it's going to be convicting Trump will derail him. And CNN just came out with it. It just came across my phone. I mean, literally, Jordan, a minute ago. And here's what it said. That former President Trump continues to hold what has been proven to be an unshakable position atop the Republican field of candidates vying to take on Joe Biden next year. Trump is the top choice for his party's nomination at the traditional Labor Day start. And he has a rival. He has his rivals by 30 percentage point. 52% of Republicans and Republican leading voters support him, compared with 18 behind Ron DeSantis. And Trump is broadly seen as the best able to handle a wide range of issues. More than 4 in 10 in the potential primary say they have definitely decided to support for him for the nomination. 43% are definite, 20% firmly behind another candidate, 37% have no choice. You've done a lot of these polls. It's not that far off now. Now you're in 100 days, you're in Iowa for the caucus. And that's when it really, and when's the next debate? Is it October or is it this month?
This month.
This month.
It's a Fox Business debate.
Yeah, who's going to be, do we know who's going to be in that one yet?
It's in partnership with like Univision. I have a feeling, again, you're not going to see Donald Trump there.
I would not do it if I was Donald Trump.
And again, I don't think it's not affecting his poll numbers. It's so far, the people who are getting bounces from these debates, they're still in the teens or not even. So I think they are the vice presidential debate at best, because vice president might not come from any of those individuals.
Who do you think had the best night when you look at it a week later, 2 weeks later? Nikki Haley?
I think she definitely made a name for herself. Ramaswamy got his name out there. People's
pillared this week, though.
Right. So that's what happens. Is if you have a good night, you have to be ready for what's coming for you, which is, again, people like Ron DeSantis, they're getting killed financially, fundraising, because of the Vivek Ramaswamy's.
Dude, I think that's true as well for people like Nikki Haley. We'll be able to do it next segment. Oh, we are ready. Let's take Jane's call out of South Carolina. Are we ready for that call?
Yes. Thank you, and thank
sure.
you. I had the pleasure of meeting RFK Jr. a couple of weeks ago when he was here in downtown Charleston.
Yeah, he was in South Carolina for a few days. Yep.
He was. And he really just opened everything up and made everything so succinctly honest and forthright. And his integrity is impeccable after 40 years sobriety. He's just a marvelous fellow, and I would love to see him go against Trump.
What do you think about his position on abortion?
I don't really have an opinion on abortion.
Yeah.
I think it's really a woman thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, he sort of takes that same kind of view. He does not support late-term abortions, which I guess is not a surprise. His economic policies sound very Republican.
Yeah.
His foreign policies sound very Republican, and Jane, if you went and listened to JFK's speech to the Economic Club of New York, you would think it was Ronald Reagan.
Yep.
So the Democratic Party has changed, not so much the stalwarts of the Democratic Party. Does he have a fighting chance, Jordan? He's at 20%.
I don't think inside the Democrat Party.
And they have those super delegates.
Right. They would rather have a Michelle Obama or a Gavin Newsom as a party regular who walks the party line. I think that's where RFK doesn't have a real home. He says, you know, he's been a Democrat his whole life. His family's, of course, been Democrats, and they care about the party. But it's really not a party that has a place for him in it. We've talked about that with, like, Tulsi Gabbard. Eventually, it became a party that had no room for Tulsi Gabbard. It has no room for these RFK Juniors. It really has no room for the libertarian-leaning Democrat. And so, we always talk about those third parties. We're getting a little too late for that, too.
Hey, you know, our friends on Rumble, we got a lot of people watching on Rumble, so make sure you're subscribing, following us, and also sharing it with your friends. Same thing on YouTube and Facebook. Coming up, we're going to give you a live report from our offices in Jerusalem with our colleague, Senior Counsel Jeff Balaban. A lot happening there that we're involved in at the ACLJ, and support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. Back with more in a moment.
Secchio, we are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We can take one more call on Biden and the situation there before we go to Israel and our office in Israel. Terry in Oklahoma online too. Hey, Terry.
Hey, gentlemen. I have a quick question about if there are any constitutional provisions or maybe a legal process in the event, say, that Biden were nominated by his party next year, and they've already had the convention, and that he is either incapacitated, say through stroke or something like that, or he passes away before the election.
So the Democrats have a super priority situation, a super delegate situation. So those delegates can then reapportion, or the party itself could reapportion and appoint an individual. They're not going to let it go unfulfilled.
Yeah, I think they would go to the provision in, again, the presidential line of succession that you still...
But that's if... And then, right, the vice president would become the president.
He'll still be there.
Right, so it's not like that one happened, but there is a process there, yes. All right, we're taking more calls when we come back. 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Jeff Balaban in Jerusalem, as you can see in the background there. Beautiful background of a... It looks like a nice... Almost fall day in Jerusalem. Jeff, there is a lot of talk about Saudi Arabia, which we thought, if Trump was going to be in for another term, would have signed on to the Abraham Accords. What's the latest between, first of all, what's the relations like right now between Saudi Arabia and Israel?
You know, there's a lot of obvious need here to protect the stability of the region, which the Abraham Accords launched into the stratosphere. And Saudi Arabia is tremendously concerned. And Saudi is an American ally, even if we don't necessarily share values. It's a strategic ally. And specifically, they're concerned about Iran. And Iran wants to have hegemony over this area. And Saudi, therefore, along with Egypt and Jordan, help with America and now increasingly Israel. So Israel and Saudi, their relationship has always been sort of behind closed doors, very useful, if not friendly. Now it's getting even warmer than it was before. Saudi Arabia is allowing Israeli airlines to fly over Saudi airspace, which never used to happen. And although Saudis are not fully part of the Abraham Accords, there seem to be suggestions they might get closer towards that.
You know, it's interesting to me, Jeff, when I was reading through this, it was something I kind of missed too, is that over the past few years, the Saudi government has stopped funding the Palestinian Authority. And so, and I would imagine they were one of the larger funders of the Palestinian Authority, but they stopped funding them because they said that, you know, the Palestinians were, they're frustrated at the fact that they had no gratitude, that they were pocketing the money, like we've talked about, that so many billionaires being made over the Palestinian Authority and the PA, instead of actually getting things accomplished. I mean, I think that's pretty shocking for a lot of people to hear that the Saudis had already given up on funding the Palestinians directly.
I think people are surprised. You know, one of the great insights that led to the Abraham Accords' vast success in normalization and even warm peace with major American allies in the region is that they recognize that, you know, the notion of a separate Palestinian state, as apart from, let's say, the state of Jordan, which is ethnically the same as the Arab population here in Israel. In fact, the land of Israel was divided and Jordan was given 80% of it. And so now these people the Palestinian Authority are trying to grab more and more. And in fact, they've declared openly they want the end of the state of Israel. So they don't really want peace. And the and frankly, other countries here, like Saudi Arabia, are sick of it. They're sick. They're done with it. They don't want to see it anymore. They do have to worry about their street, meaning they're still popular in the Saudi street. But the ruling class understands that for purposes of stability, which is America's interest in this region, it's better to deal with the Israelis. And they're really not interested anymore directly in helping the Palestinians achieve their own state. They would like to see the Palestinians have better lives, but they recognize better lives actually means that Israel has sovereignty, not that a new state be created.
You know, Jeff, one of the things, and we've done work, you and I have done work over there now for, I'm trying to think, my goodness, what have you been doing this? Probably 15 years, more longer than that, probably 20 years. When we negotiated some of the deals that we did for the intergovernmental stuff. And you look at the situation now where Bibi Netanyahu, they were saying he would take his government down in order to get the Saudis to the table. Now he said he's not going to have to do that to get it there. Do you think it is possible that we see Saudi Arabia as part of the Abraham Accords in the next 4 to 6 months? And will the Biden administration allow that to happen?
So that is the ultimate question, Jay, which is to say, I believe, I'm concerned that the Biden administration will not allow it to happen without some major concessions to the idea of the creation of a Palestinian state or giving the Palestinian Authority even greater and greater ability to claim to be a state on the international front, which is actually completely contrary to the interests of peace, of security, of Israel's interests. And as Israel has come more and more to regret Oslo and regret the idea of allowing the Palestinian, remember the PLO, the Palestinian Authority is just the new name, the new face of the PLO, yeah, the notorious terrorist group, and allowing them to claim territory. You know, there is no legal, historical, or moral background for the idea of creating yet another state here in the Jewish heartland.
Yeah, hey, Jeff, for people that are watching this shot, because it's the first time we've used this shot outside the area there, what are they looking at?
So yeah, I'm sitting right now. This is on the porch of overlooking the old city of Jerusalem. So these are the walls that you see behind me of the old city of Jerusalem. Off in the distance, you might see some small towers, actually. Yeah. That's David's Citadel off in the distance. But we are right behind me is a valley. As you know, Jerusalem is a series of hills.
Right.
It's the valley, and right past it, that is the old city walls of Jerusalem. This is the center of the biblical heartland.
Yeah, which is the center of the world. It's a great shot, and I think it helps people understand. We should probably do in the next couple of years one of our trips to Israel. We haven't done that in a decade. Maybe in a year or two we'll do that. Jeff, last question here, and that is this. You know, we've done a lot of work at the International Criminal Court in The Hague on behalf of Israel, on behalf of the United States, too. The UN, we just filed at the UN, the human rights reports from Israel, which we gave a high grade to. But we need to expect, I think, and our audience needs to be prepared, that there's going to be, we'll be the positive, but there's going to be a lot of negatives.
100%. Look, there's no question anyone involved in this, and we are heavily involved in this, knows that the United Nations is not Israel's friend, that the United Nations, frankly, and we've talked about this openly, does many things that are clearly anti-Semitic. And yes, the involvement of the UN in all of this tends to be to create a record, a global record that chastises Israel as the worst wrongdoer in the world, which is, it's so beyond absurd, Jay. Israel is a beacon of liberalism, of peace, of humanity, of tolerance, of democracy, and they're doing their best to try and make it out to be evil. And so it's so vitally important that what you're talking about, ACLJ does, it steps into the middle, represents the interests of the United States of America with their great ally Israel, and really in a way that almost nobody else does, and nobody can do it in the way ACLJ does it.
We appreciate it. Jeff, coming from our office in Jerusalem, beautiful backdrop behind you. First time we've used that shot. It looks great. Folks, folks, we've got an email going out today on our whistleblowers. We just filed a major lawsuit against the deep state. We've got the whistleblower issue that's going on right now, which is putting us in federal court for them in the Court of Appeals. That's how that starts. Your support of the ACLJ makes sure our office in Jerusalem is operating so we can defend the state of Israel, but also defend these whistleblowers here in the United States. Jordan's going to let you know how you can support our work. It's critical that you do that. And if you're not getting our emails, make sure you do.
That's right. Go to ACLJ.org. You can donate there. You can sign up to be on the ACLJ list. It's a great place to be informed about all the work that we are doing. Of course, we talk about as much as we can on the broadcast, But we don't have time every day to talk about all the work that we're doing. So go to aclj.org, support us financially if you can, but sign up to make sure you're in the know about what we're doing at aclj.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Right, welcome back to Seculo. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Rick Rennell is going to be joining us in the next segment of the broadcast. We'll be talking about some of this new moves by China and a new attempt of how they are spying inside the United States and how Chinese nationals have been caught in the United States. There's also a concern, and we'll speak more to it, about how these are not necessarily spies who have been sent here, but Chinese nationals then being pressured by the Chinese government to carry out missions on behalf of China and report back information. And of course, they threaten their families at home. They threaten their interests back at home. So again, puts people in a very tough situation. And that this is something that's not happening on a one-off basis, but it's something the U.S. military is seeing over and over and over again. So we're going to talk about that with Rick Grinnell. Kim Jong-un is back in the news again, this time though not with about meeting with the U.S. administration, but meeting with Russia, which again, you would think Russia was at a point with the war going on in Ukraine that you wouldn't bring more attention like meeting with the North Koreans to you, but for the fact that they are, North Koreans are providing a lot of weaponry to the Russians. And in return for that, the Russians are providing the resources that North Koreans need, like food and basic waters. You kind of forget, because they can't really feed their own people, that they do have a pretty good arms ability to manufacture arms. I wouldn't trust a lot of their rockets and missiles, but for their small arms and things like that, they're a major exporter to these countries like Russia when they get sanctioned.
Also, I want to point out, I think this is important, we have an email going out today. I want to read you how it starts in the beginning. This one's to William. It says, Biden's FBA actually told one of our clients, this is true, folks, don't sue us. In other words, they knew that they were going to be taking direct action, including suspending their security clearances, and they said, don't sue us. So we did. And we are in federal court of appeals on that right now. We just filed this major lawsuit against the Biden deep state defending our clients who've been mistreated horribly. Now, you wouldn't know anything about Biden's malicious threat tagging of pro-lifers, targeting of Christian parents as terrorists. We're spying on Christians in churches were it not for these brave actions of these FBI agents. So they've done a tremendous service. We're representing agents O'Boyle and FBI analyst Marcus Allen, who, by the way, was the Charlotte office employee of the year, who followed federal whistleblower procedures to bring these kind of constitutional violations to light. Now the deep state is unleashing a firestorm of illegal fear tactics to crush their families. That is the words of O'Boyle, to crush them and to keep them quiet. He said now that he's represented by the ACLJ, he feels like he's protected. Well, we have just filed his case in the federal appellate court. It goes directly to the Court of Appeals and are working to legally defend other brave whistleblowers. Others are coming forward, Jordan, as you know, and we're going through those. We've retained, as part of our legal team for this, I think this is important to point out, because when you're supporting the ACLJ, you just saw your impact of your office in Jerusalem that you're supporting. By the way, we're about to make, in the next year, a major announcement about expansion in two major cities. But let me tell you something else, okay? We just brought in Jane Raskin. Now, you know that name. She was one of President Trump's impeachment lawyers, handled the probe with me of Bob Mueller. So she's a seasoned criminal defense lawyer, brilliant lawyer. She's part of the ACLJ team now, too, helping us with these cases. So we put together the right team. We have a solid team in place. Our friend Craig Parshall, our colleague, is working on that as well, going after the big tech side of things. We're fighting for you. And what we would like you to do, as I said last week, these folks need us and we need you. And even though we're not in a drive right now or a matching challenge, your support to the ACLJ makes a huge difference. Jordan's going to let you know how to do it. I encourage you to do it today.
Yeah, donate to ACLJ.org. Remember, we are representing Turning Point USA, Charlie Kirk, in the censorship cases there by these social media companies and by the government pressuring social media companies into censorship when they built platforms that for those social media companies of millions of people that they then could no longer get their access to. They could no longer access the people that they brought to the platforms because of their content they were providing. So we're representing TPUSA and Charlie Kirk. Support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. We'll be right back on Seculum. To Secular, take your calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. They're called Chinese gate crashers at U.S. bases, sparking espionage concern. This report in the Wall Street Journal that the incidents range from Chinese nationals found crossing into a U.S. missile range in New Mexico to what appeared to be scuba divers swimming in murky waters near a U.S. government rocket launch site in Florida. Let me tell you what you will not usually see. Is scuba divers in murky waters in Florida. They're usually inhabited by other creatures that can be fairly dangerous to those scuba divers, unless they are there for some sort of mission. You are not accidentally diving in those areas near missile bases. You're not accidentally trying to cross into U.S. missile ranges in New Mexico. But what is also concerning about this, I want to go to Rick Rennell right off the top, is that, Rick, we are hearing that these individuals who are being caught are actually being forced into this, that they are Chinese nationals here in America that are then being pressured by the Chinese government. They might not be actual, full-time spies, but pressured into the Chinese government to carry out these missions or else. And then they threaten them with something. And I think that's horrible for Chinese Americans that are here, because it sets a bad tone that, you know, we should be suspicious of all Chinese Americans. But also, it's the reality is that China is doing this to Chinese Americans.
Well, look, many of these individuals are illegally in the country. And so there is a difference between celebrating the contributions of immigrants to this country, legal immigrants, people who waited in line and did the right thing, and then those who are illegally here and here for nefarious reasons. Now, look, I have to be careful how I talk about this particular subject, because we are getting into an area that is rift with sources and methods. But let me just say this, because it was publicly talked about. When I was acting director of national intelligence, we had to, with the FBI, give local, state, and federal politicians what we call defensive briefings. Mm. Where we would go to them and say, the person that you're talking to, the person that you are doing some sort of activity with, is a communist Chinese spy, and you've been duped. And many times, these individuals who were local politicians or federal politicians,
yep,
had no idea what was happening. But make no mistake, the Chinese strategy is to get unwitting people.
But, you know, it's interesting here. You got, these are nationals. I mean, these are people that have come to the United States. Andy, the Department of Justice, and you are a U.S. attorney, you were in charge of the criminal division for Atlanta, big office, has a whole division under their national security apparatus department that deals with espionage.
That's right.
And you would think they would be right on top of this, because this is a real threat to the United States.
Well, if you go to the website, you see a statement by Director Chris Wray in which he says, this is our top priority right now, is counterintelligence and espionage situations. But that doesn't seem to be what, in practice, the main focus of the FBI is. It's attacking conservatives. Pregnancy resource centers are not being protected, making raids on Mar-a-Lago to see whether documents are there that should have been in the archives.
Being reviewed, right.
Churches being reviewed and monitored to see whether their religious doctrine is okay, or whether they're maybe too orthodox in their statements. So the FBI is the lead agency in this counter-espionage movement in the United States, and they're not simply not doing their job. The Nationals say they've lost their way. They said they were looking for a Burger King or a McDonald's or a hotel, and they end up, as Jordan said, scuba diving in Key West or at the White Sands Proving Ground in New Mexico. And so the base penetrations are a growing and concerning trend in the U.S. military, and the FBI should be doing their job. My estimation is they're not.
Mm.
You know, Rick, one of those issues, too, I want to go to as well is North Korea. We saw unprecedented moves under the Trump administration trying to build some dialogue there and a back and forth exchange to really kind of cool off the threats and the rocket launches and the attempts by North Koreans. But now we're seeing a total reversal where the North Koreans are thinking about actually going to and bringing Kim Jong-un to Russia, which is quite a move in itself. Right. Yeah. And we know that the North Koreans have been providing weapons to Russia in exchange for Russia providing goods and like food stamps, things like that to the North Koreans. But it just kind of shows people how quickly things can change when a foreign policy goes bad.
Well, look, Donald Trump's diplomacy was all about keeping enemies in dialogue so that they weren't working with our other enemies to come up with nuclear weapons and attack us. Remember, North Korea is testing their nuclear weapons. We know they have some, and they're trying to miniaturize it and get it on the head of a ballistic missile that will travel a long way and explode somewhere. We know that they have technology and testing that is getting very close to a concern for the west coast of the United States. Some believe it's even able to reach the east coast at this point if they could get all the pieces together. So we have to be very careful with North Korea. My concern with the Biden administration is that you literally can't find a part of the world that is doing better under Joe Biden these last 2.5 years. Pick a part of the world, any part, any region, and we have dialed back. We've become less safe, less secure, and our enemies are starting to organize together against us.
You want to go to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Virginia calling from Georgia on line one. Hey, Virginia.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Great.
Fine. I'm 80 years old. I've been a proud Georgian for 71 years.
Yes.
For the first time in my life, I'm ashamed of Georgia. I've enjoyed hearing Newt and the other gentlemen. Excellent replies. You please have a good day.
Well,
thank you.
Yeah, we are. Look, I know a lot of people in Georgia. I mean, I spent a lot of my years in Georgia. Andy's in Georgia. I mean, Jordan was born in Georgia, and we've got a lot going back. This DA's case, Andy, has got a lot of people because it's unprecedented.
Virginia, I'm a Georgian too, and I'm very sorry that we have the situation that we have in Fulton County. You've got a district attorney right here who's out of control. You've got a district attorney who says if you disagree with an election and you contest it, you're a racketeer. Now, is the president of the United States, Donald Trump, a racketeer, really? Is Rudy Giuliani, who was deputy attorney general, a racketeer? Is Mark Meadows, who was chief of staff for President Trump, a racketeer, or any of these other 18 people who were on alternate slate or electors, just like was promulgated in Hawaii when Nixon and Kennedy were running? I mean, is this really what we need to be doing in the state of Georgia?
But they are.
What about murders and prosecutions for criminal acts in Fulton County? What about those?
Yeah, so the question, Rick, on the political side of this, and we talked to the president last week on the broadcast, and you're talking to him every day as well, is it? I think for the... this portion of it, for the primaries, it seems to be solidifying the report. So the indictments did not hurt him politically. What about a conviction if it was before the election?
I mean, look, you guys are the legal experts. What I'm reading and what I'm being told is that there's just no possible way that we're going to get to a trial before the election. But let's just say that we do. I think that everything that the Democrats are doing to weaponize the justice system Yep. against Donald Trump is really beginning to tell the message for us. We are seeing independents say that they've had enough. This is now with 91 charges against the president. It's too much. They've overplayed it, and people see it.
I think Rick's right.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that, again, that... The left, the dream is now, they thought it was going to be indictments. That again, did not score what they thought it would. They thought the mugshot, that didn't score. That backfires us, too. And then so now they're going to rush to try to get a conviction. It's very hard to see on paper how that happens. I mean, you could see how some of these start, potentially, but mm-hmm. actually getting to an end game, actual after all the motions you can go through, after all the issues that arise just for President Trump. We're not talking about the other people involved in these cases, but just because you're talking about a president, I mean, there's so many different issues that could be appealed. Some that could be appealed multiple times.
A final order, I agree with Rick. Not likely, Andy.
That's true. I agree. And let me tell you, if there's a conviction in Fulton County, Jay and Jordan, that conviction is not good outside that courthouse because the Georgia Court of Appeals has to review it, and they're not going to ever affirm a conviction on these trumped up ridiculous charges.
Do you think they're that conservative?
Yes, I do.
What about the Supreme Court of Georgia?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Because there's some thought that they'd be better off in federal court.
Well, they may be. The jury pool would be drawn from the Northern District of Georgia, which goes all the way to the South Carolina, North Carolina, and Tennessee border, and it would not just include Fulton County. I would rather see them tried in federal court, but for some reason, some of the defendants prefer to stay in Fulton County.
Yeah, they do, and the question is going to be, if one goes, do they all go? And that seems to be good what question. The law is, and yes. It's not clear, though. Right. All right, we've got one last segment coming up. I want to turn to the economy, but also support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. Any amount you donate supports our work at the ACLJ, keeps our office in Jerusalem open. And by the way, for those of you that did respond to our Law and Justice, our drive on life and liberty, boy, thank you. We did better than we thought we would do. Thank you so much. Back with more.
Back to Secular. One issue that affects every single one of us, especially when it's election time and you start getting kind of these debates start happening and you see people look at their pocketbooks. It's the back to school time. You start getting into the fall when you start getting into thinking differently about spending. Summer's over and a lot of people thought, okay, maybe things will calm down politically, maybe with inflation. But what we saw is gas prices go back up again. We've seen, again, kind of record prices. But in a lot of areas, you know, obviously spending is slowing down, construction slowing down, depending on where you live in the country. And we still get talks about rate hikes, not rate deductions. There's a whole host of people that believe that very close to the election, you'll start getting rate deductions and that they'll start playing games with the economy. Again, I think that's horrendous if you start using that system for political purposes and not for legitimate purposes. But we want to bring in Harry Hutchinson here now because, Harry, what we've got a new report is that the federal deficit is expected to nearly double this year from about $1 trillion last year to $2 trillion for the fiscal year ending September 30th. And so people are, I'm sure, wondering now, why is that doubling now in a post kind of coming out of the COVID world?
Well, I think the answer is quite simple. Particularly if politicians and journalists keep track of the math. Basically, spending has exceeded income and revenues for quite some time. Indeed, the current deficit has reached about 6-7% of gross domestic product. And the deficit spending at that level has only reached 7% or so over the last 60 years, seven specific years. So it's very, very easy to answer, I think, that particular question. Nonetheless, journalists and politicians, what are they saying? They're saying that the budget deficit unexpectedly has gone up to about $2 trillion. This is precisely what we should expect if we keep track of the numbers.
You know, I mean, I think honestly what people want to know here is it's kind of prediction numbers with politics is how much politics is having a play in this. I mean, we know the Fed is supposed to be independent to some extent, but obviously what you don't see from the Biden administration is pressure yet to get these interest rates down, and I mean, they continue to rise, and ultimately, people will stop spending, or they already are. They have to stop, especially big items where they would take out loans, mortgages, and things like that.
I think you're precisely correct. So higher interest rates will clearly have a knock-on effect with respect to consumer spending, with respect to manufacturers. But it's also important to keep in mind that higher interest rates means that the federal government has to spend more and more money on interest. And this is going to squeeze out other spending priorities. Then there's the overhang that comes from our commitment to Ukraine. The federal government continues to ramp up its spending in Ukraine, protecting the Ukrainian border, but refuses to spend a minuscule amount protecting the southern border. And so, again, what we are dealing with is misplaced priorities, I believe, in Washington. This is adversely affecting and will adversely affect consumers in the long run.
The Fed said in a report, I think yesterday or over the weekend, that they now see the chances of recession at less than 15%. How do you feel about that?
Well, that's a very good question. Many Americans believe that the probability of a recession is much, much higher than that. And in fact, when you take a survey of American consumers, they think the economy is uniformly bad. What will that do? It will dampen down spending. This will then lead to a rise in inventories. And then with a rise in inventories, this increases the odds that people will indeed be laid off and you will have a self-fulfilling prophecy, meaning that you will indeed have a recession, notwithstanding what the Federal Reserve is saying.
The interesting thing in the housing market, I think this is the interesting part of the housing market, is you've got in the high end of the housing market, let's say the seven-figure houses, do not seem to be affected by this at all. But in the 300,000 to 600,000, which is the bulk of the real estate market, that is being dramatically impacted because that's where the interest rates are a factor. Someone buying a $4 million house isn't worried about a mortgage.
Precisely. And so it's important to keep in mind that for middle and working class voters, they are facing strong headwinds from higher and higher interest rates. And if you look at the national data, existing home sales have fallen by almost 17% year over year. And so many people are reluctant to give up, for instance, their low mortgage rate to buy, let's say, a larger house, because if they buy a larger house, they have to pay the new interest rate, which is doubling the mortgage cost that they are having to pay on the same house, let's say, they would have purchased 24 months ago.
I want to change subjects just a little bit, and that is point out to people to go to aclj.org. We've got two new issues that we've got up that are very significant, and we did not really have time to address them last week. One was we have filed a reply brief at the Supreme Court of the United States regarding our case against Planned Parenthood. So that is now fully briefed and at the Supreme Court of the United States. That was filed last week. We also announced that we're representing Charlie Kirk and Turning Point USA against the Biden administration. Jordan, this is a big lawsuit.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, looking at how these governments have been pressing social media companies to silence individual accounts, organizations' accounts, and these are, again, groups who got millions of people, who recruited millions of people to these sites so that they could deliver them a message, whether it was a video message or a certain kind of content. And then these sites start taking away their ability to reach people who got on there to follow them, to get their information. And so you're put into this quandary where it's not a traditional public forum because you're dealing with private companies, but yet you're also dealing with an unbelievable amount of government interest and government, I'd say, induced
oversight.
Censorship to these companies. And the government's holding over their head the idea that, by the way, you know, we could take away your ability to have the protections in place where you don't get sued for certain content that might show
up. Section 230
protections. Right. I mean, so they hold that over their head.
Yeah, but what's so interesting about this, Harry, to me, is you've got the hand of government or the thumb of government picking one side of the scale, going to these tech companies and saying, hey, look, we don't want this information out. This is misinformation. This is disinformation. Don't put this out. And they leave the other side totally alone.
Precisely. So one of the things that the listeners should keep in mind is that the government has a skewed understanding of the First Amendment. The First Amendment protects all speech, including speech that the government dislikes. The current administration essentially has said, we will put our thumb on the scale and we will try to squelch speech that we find particularly offensive. The federal government has no right to make that particular judgment, and that's why these lawsuits that we are bringing and participating in are so important.
All right, go to aclj.org, folks. Learn about all the work that we're doing. Continue to support the work of the ACLJ financially at aclj.org. And remember to share this broadcast with your friends and family. But there's so much information up there about all the different work we're doing, both legally, public policy, and internationally at aclj.org. We'll talk to you tomorrow.